From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. The legislature is considering the largest government reorganization package in almost 25 years. It merges state agencies, reduces middle management, and consolidates email and purchasing. Supporters promise big cost savings, but skeptics fear services will be reduced and savings will be minimal. We'll discuss the reform package this afternoon, first with key lawmakers and then the governor. It's your first chance to speak with Governor Culver since his condition of the state address last week. Join us this hour on The Exchange, but first, the news. Good afternoon. From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. The Iowa legislature is considering the largest government reorganization package in almost 25 years. And here to talk about it today, Democratic Representative Mary Masher of Iowa City, and on the phone with us, Republican Senator Randy Feenstra of Hull. Thank you both for being on the program today.
Thanks, Janine. I'm glad to be here. I'm in the Iowa City studio and looking forward to a good discussion today.
Senator Feenstra, thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, good afternoon, Janine. It's great to be on. It's an honor and a privilege to hear your show and be on it.
Great. Well, the governor will be joining us, for those of you listening, the second half of the program. But let's first talk about this government reorganization package. Representative Masher, you co-chaired an interim legislative committee that worked on this all summer long. What is the amount of cost savings you hope to gain from this?
Good question, Janine. Obviously, we are looking forward to identifying significant savings in the tens of millions is what we are looking at. We will have a fiscal note on the bill this week. We're hoping to have that tomorrow when we go back to Des Moines. And we will be able to identify exactly how much savings will be in each part of the bill and obviously give taxpayers an idea of how many dollars will actually be able to benefit from this legislation. And that money obviously will be able to be put into the general fund to help fund our priorities of education, health care, public safety, job creation, and the environment. We're looking at ways that we can get this budget balanced and be able to show the taxpayers that.
I know that the fact that the state was short in revenues was the impetus behind it, but is there another benefit beyond the cost savings to be realized here, Representative Masher?
Absolutely. There are government efficiencies that we oftentimes don't look at unless there is a real push and a need. And right now we have a definite need. And so there are things that are on the table that we have discussed and talked about for quite some time, but we've never had the political will to do it. And I think the political will is there now, and I see this as an opportunity. So the bill passed out of the interim study committee this summer and fall in a bipartisan manner, and it was unanimous. So I don't see this as a Democrat or Republican issue. I see this as a good government issue and something that we should be doing on a regular basis.
Republican Senator Randy Feenstra with us from Hull. Senator Feenstra, let me ask you about that, because some of these proposals have come from Republicans in the past, like reducing the state vehicle fleet, ideas of, online efficiencies, things like that, of merging email systems and whatnot. Did you guys feel like, finally, or are you a little disappointed that you may not get the credit for this, considering now a Democratic majority looking at these ideas?
Sure. Well, I just want to say thanks to Representative Masher and Senator Apple. They worked real hard on this summer, along with the commission. I sat on that also. And you know what? I don't care who takes credit for it. I've worked long and hard over the years to say I dramatically want to change government. And this is a way. I mean, it creates efficiency. When we, look at the budget shortfall, if that's what it takes to reform government, then I guess that makes me enthusiastic. So it's a great opportunity, and I like a lot of things that are in this bill.
Well, let's start with let's go down a couple of the ideas in this bill. First of all, what state agencies, Representative Masher, would merge under this legislation? Would we see some agencies actually go away?
One of the things that we are looking at is combining agencies and looking at efficiencies there. There's a whole reorganization in the Department of Human Rights. And in that department, we've got the Latino Affairs and Commission on the Status of Women and all of those individual organizations that are a part of that. And what we're trying to do is bring them all under one umbrella so that there are more efficiencies in how they operate. Currently, they all have been appointed by the governor, and they're all kind of their own department. And that just didn't make a lot of sense to us. So when Preston Daniels came in as director for the Human Rights Department, he had some innovative ideas and ways that he felt that that department could work much better together. And so in working with all of those agency heads, he came up with language that we believe is going to make that department much more efficient. And again, something that we've tried to do in the past, but the motivation wasn't quite there. And so again, I see this as an opportunity. Another one was putting the drug czar under the public safety, the Department of Public Safety. And again, we feel that there's a real good commonality there in terms of them working together to be able to accomplish the same things. But we feel that there can be dollar savings, and again, it can be a much more efficient way of doing things in state government.
Well, one of the ideas in subcommittee last week in the Senate that received some concern by state agencies was the issue. They call it span of control. It's a priority of the state union. Ask me to say that there needs to be fewer middle managers, that instead of, say, a 1-to-11 supervisory ratio, the state should be looking at one supervisor per 20 employees, and that you would ratchet that down over the next couple of years and get to that, that magic figure of 1-to-20. Senator Feenstra, you were in that committee when some people said, look, we're worried that there'll be a lack of communication between supervisor and employee. And in some ways, whether it would be the Department of Transportation, who said they had concerns about it, the Public Defender's Office, the university systems all said, sometimes we have to have supervisors in very small agencies because it's required, and they don't supervise 20 people. What will happen under those scenarios?
Yeah, and they're exactly right. I agree that we have to do something to have less supervisors. We have so many supervisors or middle managers in government now that this bill sort of acts as a way to sort of create an opportunity to have less supervisors and less middle managers. However, we always want to be careful that we do it correctly. And I think we had one subcommittee on this, and I hope that we can continue to work through it in the next several weeks to flush this out just a little bit. But I think we're on the right track. I really think that in government, looking at all sectors, that there are a lot of middle managers or supervisors that maybe, in a positive sense, could be eliminated without losing the effectiveness of government.
Representative Mash, are you talking about letting people go, or is this through attrition, or is that why this is phased in slowly over several years?
Absolutely. Jenny, one of the things that we identified is currently in state government, it's a 1-to-11 ratio of supervisor to employees. And obviously that means in some departments there are more than 1-to-11, and in others there are less. But one of the things that we have been looking at is we know that some of those supervisors have other job responsibilities, and we want to identify what part of their FTE is actually
full-time employee.
That's right. That how much of their employment is actually spent in supervisory duties, so that we can identify that and then get something, move towards that 1-to-20 over the next 4 years. So it's not something that we're going to do immediately. But when you talk about that whole issue of face-to-face and communication, we have computers now, and I know that most of our state agencies, 90% of what they do is done over computers, and the communication is so much more efficient and effective than it used to be before we had that era of computers. And so I don't see the need for as much face-to-face. You bet there may be times that's necessary, and that should definitely be the way that they communicate those kinds of changes or staff meetings or whatever. But that is not as big of a need, and I don't think that is it shouldn't be a disproportionate amount of the time that they spend with those workers. So I think that we can look at efficiencies again and find ways to communicate in different ways that maybe we hadn't before.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. My guest today, Democratic Representative Mary Masher of Iowa City and Republican Senator Randy Feenstra of Hull. If you have a question about this government reorganization package, we encourage you to join our conversation. Call 1-866-780-9100. Is there something you've seen that state government can do more efficiently? Is there a suggestion for savings that you have? 1-866-780-9100. Senator Feenstra, I go back to that subcommittee meeting last week only because that was the first time many of us got to hear from lobbying groups on this legislation and their concerns or support for it. And one of the concerns came from the Iowa Newspaper Association about a section of the bill that would say that government agencies no longer have to post legal notices in newspaper. The Iowa Association of Newspapers said, look, you know, some large figure of Iowans, I think 80%, still turn to newspapers for their number one source, or at least a large source of their news, that people, if they have to go online to look for notices of when committees are meeting or when filings are happening, will not do that and will largely be left out of the loop. You were concerned about that.
Yeah, I was. Interesting. I've been a city administrator and an editor, and so I sit on both sides of this. But I look at it a little differently. To demand that all legal notices be put on a website and no longer in the newspaper is somewhat discriminatory. Whether it be my parents or even myself, a lot of us are used to looking at the legal notices in the newspapers, and for older people, a lot of them don't even know how to use a computer yet. Maybe in 10 years or 5 years, this might be a good idea, but until everybody is technologically savvy enough to use a computer, I think we're really creating a problem, especially in transparency in government, if this part of the bill passes.
Representative Masher, they said that this could save, though, the state government, I think it was $5 million over the next 5 years, county governments $3 million, and I cannot remember, unfortunately, the number it would save cities. But, you know, what do you think about this idea? Are you ready to say, look, go online, stop trying to read it in your newspaper?
Well, and Janine, this is a good example about how times have changed. The majority of people don't get a newspaper anymore. And I think that people need to start understanding that we get our news and our information through lots of different techniques and technology that wasn't available many years ago. And this is a voluntary kind of thing. Each of the cities, the governmental bodies, will make the decision on their own as to
how many, though, do you think will realistically choose to publish this information if they're no longer required to?
I think there are some who may do that just because that may be what their public wants. And I think they'll be responsive to them. You know, again, we talk about local control in terms of making decisions like that. I trust those local governmental bodies to determine what is in the best interest of their citizens. Any more with public libraries that have access to computers, everybody has that ability to do that. We would also be able to post them at each of the county, you know, at the county offices, at the city government offices, or the school board offices. It's not like that would be the only place they would be able to get that.
Representative Masher, I got to jump in here. We're going to take a break, but we can come back to this topic after the break. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. My guests this afternoon, Democratic Representative Mary Masher of Iowa City and Republican Senator Randy Feenstra of Hull. They're talking about a large government reorganization package moving through the legislature intended to save tens of millions of dollars for the state. One of the issues, Representative Masher, I just want to give you a chance. I don't know if you had wrapped up, but you were talking a little bit about whether the newspapers, whether local governments and the state government should be required to continue printing legal notices in newspapers. And you're saying maybe we don't need to do that anymore.
And just to finish up, I had mentioned that the majority of Iowans do not get their primary news through the newspaper. And we're seeing that number dwindle as time goes on. And newspapers are trying to adjust to that because they have online services and they make that available to people in other ways. obviously that is an option. And we know that this is important in the Newspaper Association, and they believe that this is the major way that people get that information. But we will contend that as long as it's made available to the public and it's open to their scrutiny, then that is transparency, and it is gives them the opportunity to look at exactly what those budgets are being spent on and where their dollars are obviously being devoted, what they're being devoted to.
All right. Let's go to the phones. We have a call coming in from Bettendorf. Let me give you that phone number in case you have a question for Representative Masher or Senator Feenstra. The number is 1-866-780-9100. Do you have a question about government efficiency or something you've heard so far, or do you have an idea for them how the state could save money? 1-866-780-9100. Bob is called from Bettendorf. Bob, thanks for joining us on the exchange today. I forgot. We have a new system. I'm the one clicking the phones on. Bob, can you hear us?
Yes. Okay, let's say that somebody goes to a state university, say the University of Iowa, and he wants to be a high school English teacher or any other subject. And so he studies and he passes the requirements of the University of Iowa, and he graduates and gets a diploma, and the University of Iowa says, you are qualified to be a high school English teacher. Why do we need the state education department to second-guess that decision? That's just a waste of money on employees. Why can't the person take that diploma to the local school board and say, I am qualified, I'm looking for a job?
Bob, that isn't part of reorganization. I'm not sure where this...
His suggestion, at least prior to coming on the air, was that we get rid of the Board of Educational Examiners, which would be a reorganization and would be a savings.
You know, this came about a number of years ago when we did our teacher quality legislation, and what they were looking at is evaluating teachers in those first couple of years to see whether they are a competent, capable teacher. What you do academically sometimes does not translate into the classroom. And what we want to do is to be able to give those individuals a couple years to be able to develop their skills and their trade. And then at the end of that time, the department or the Board of Education Examiners will grant them that diploma. But just because you've gone through those rigors and gone through the academic courses doesn't automatically assume that you will be successful in a classroom. And so that's why both are there.
I think the Board of Educational Examiners looks at the credit hours. I think that's what they do. It would take the high school principal to know if you're really doing your job in the high school. The Board of Educational Examiners in Des Moines wouldn't have a clue.
But the high school, that's the whole point. The high school principal evaluates that individual and then makes recommendations on whether they would receive their permanent license or not. So you're absolutely right. It is the high school principal or the elementary principal who would be evaluating that teacher, but they make the recommendations on whether they should receive their permanent license.
Bob, I think you hit on a very key point here, and that is the bureaucracy within government. And the Department of Ed is probably one of the most largest bureaucratic organizations that we have in the state. And I do think that we need to look at every area, every agency, and see what bureaucratic regulations we have that we can get rid of and make it more efficient, not only for the students, but also for the schools. And the Department of Ed really has to look at how can we further benefit our children instead of continuing to have different layers of this old bureaucracy.
All right. Thank you, Senator Feenstra. We have a Steve on the line from Toledo. Steve, what's your suggestion for the senator and representative today?
Well, my suggestion would be that we should start at the top and consider moving to a unicameral legislature. I'd like to know their reaction to that.
All right. Senator Feenstra, you haven't been in the legislature as long as Representative Masher, but what would you think of a unicameral instead of a House and a Senate, just one chamber?
Well, I think Steve, again, has a great point. I would love to have not only a unicameral, I'd like to condense it down to, sort of like South Dakota does, condense it down to 30 or 45 days to move through things. I'd like to do what Nebraska does and maybe have it every other year. And I'd also like to have term limits. I think every one of us should only have 10 or 12 years or be allowed 10 or 12 years in the Senate or the House. I think these are very good ideas.
Representative Masher, I think you've been in a little longer than 10 years, right?
I sure have. I'm just finishing up my 16th year. And term limits, it's interesting. When we originally were debating that, and I've been there long enough to have had that, been involved in that debate, it came from a number of legislators across the state and or across the nation, and many of those ideas came from Republicans at the time. But what we found in Iowa was that two-thirds of our legislative chamber turned over every 5 years, and there really wasn't a need for term limits because most people didn't stay in it that long, and there wasn't really a need for that.
What about a unicameral legislature or a shorter session or meeting every other year? Are any of those possibilities?
You know, there's an implication that with a unicameral legislature that it's more efficient or that it would cost less money, you know, those kinds of things, or that it would be less partisan. I can tell you that in states that have it, they would tell you the partisanship is still there. It doesn't eliminate that. And in terms of, I think one of the benefits of having two different chambers to look at legislation is you have that many more eyes that can examine it and thoroughly determine whether it is in the best interest of Iowans. And if you only have one, you know, cameral group that's going through that, you oftentimes miss things. And I think that therein lies the dilemma and why most states have not gone to that. They believe there is power in being able to have two different chambers that scrutinize legislation. I'll be honest, there are times in the House that we miss things that the Senate picks up and vice versa, where there are different eyes on it, can see different problems or different issues that maybe the other one didn't. And I think that is a strength in the system, is being able to have that many more eyes on the issue and determining whether it's going to go through or not.
Going through two chambers, I have to admit, I don't know how it works in Nebraska to compare, but going through two chambers, there is a little bit longer time to give the public time to weigh in on legislation as well.
And that, I think, is an advantage, too, because the public then can determine whether this is something that will be beneficial to Iowans.
All right. Will you recommend, Representative Masher, closing one of the mental health institutions? I know you guys asked for recommendations last year from the Department of Human Services. They recommended closing, if need be, the Mount Pleasant Mental Health Institute. Do you think that will happen?
You know, there are still discussions going on about that. I do not know at this time what we will recommend. It is not part of reorganization at this stage of the game, and it is something that I know Jack Hatch, Senator Hatch, and Representative Lisa Heddens are looking at very carefully. We look to our chairs in those budget appropriations committees to give us recommendations in those areas where they have expertise. And so we will look closely at what their recommendations are and we'll act accordingly.
All right. You've been listening to The Exchange. I'm Janine Beck. The Senator Randy Feenstra from Hull and Representative Mary Masher from Iowa City, thank you both for joining me. The governor is running a few minutes late, so I may ask you to stay on with us for just a little bit into the next half hour of the program if you are available.
More than happy to.
Sure.
Wonderful. Appreciate it very much. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. We'll be back in just a few moments.
And you're listening to Iowa Public Radio at 12:30.
I'm Janine Beck. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We are waiting for Iowa Governor Chet Culver, who will hopefully be joining us in just a few minutes to discuss the government reorganization package. He has been held up at a Martin Luther King event here in Des Moines and will be joining us in just a brief time. But first, Democratic Representative Mary Masher of Iowa City and Republican Senator Randy Feenstra of Hull, both committee members looking at that government reorganization package, have agreed to stay with us on the line. Let me ask you, Senator Feenstra, it seemed during the committee work last week that Senator Stacey Apple, who was leading that meeting, was a bit defensive when groups would ask to change the bill. And I don't mean that in a negative way. She seemed very protective of this sort of agreement that you've reached on government reorganization and seemed to fear that people were trying to dismantle it. Are you getting a lot of pushback from state agencies on this?
Well, I think we're getting a lot of discussion, and I know Senator Apple put a lot of time and effort into it, just like we all did. But I just think it's very good that we hear all the stakeholders involved and hear their ideas and their thoughts. And that's why it scares me when we hear this is on a fast track. I just hope that we have transparency and everybody comes to the table and that we create good policy rather than trying to ram something through to fill a budget hole.
Representative Masher, is there a fine line between fast track in a sense that so it does not get dismantled because people do have turfs they want to protect, and between what Senator Feenstra is saying of, well, we got to think this through so that the savings aren't short term and then eventually cost us in the long run because we didn't think something through?
Senator Feenstra, you just made the case for why two different chambers is important, and a unicameral wouldn't necessarily be the best in the best interest of Iowans. I think it's extremely important that both the Senate and the House examine the legislation thoroughly. We understand that we're going to get pushback from different agencies, and there are individuals who have legitimate concerns that we need to address and look at. And I believe that Senator Apple and I are both more than willing to do that, and we'll look at changes in the bill. We already know that there are errors and things that have already it's a 260-page bill, so there's a lot of reading to do. I've been doing that all weekend. I'm not quite through the entire bill yet, but I am making notes and ready for our subcommittee process next week. We will be taking it up in the House on Tuesday, and we'll have a subcommittee available for all who want to be there to participate and to give us that feedback. That feedback's important. It's not as if we don't want to hear it. We think it's important in being able to craft the best legislation. So we look forward to that. We look forward to addressing the concerns that individuals might have and then either finding remedies for them or determining whether it's really important that we move it forward. So the bill's going to be different, and we know that when it comes out of the Senate and House. We're willing to work together with the governor's office to be able to craft the best legislation possible.
Representative Masher, thank you so much for your time. Senator Feenstra, we've appreciated having both of you on, and we'll look forward to further discussion on this legislation.
Thank you so much. We appreciate being on today.
All right. Thank you, Janine. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Senator. And now Governor Chet Culver has joined us. Governor Culver was running just a bit behind from a Martin Luther King event, but we're glad to have you on the program. Thanks for being on The Exchange, Governor.
Great to be with you, Janine. Thanks for having me.
Governor, we've been discussing upon your arrival the government reorganization bill that's moving through the legislature. And of course, a lot of it mirrors proposals from a consultant that you hired to look at government to see if there were ways the state could do things more efficiently and save some money. What are you seeing as that product has been out now for some public scrutiny? Are you seeing pushback from agencies, or are they largely receptive? What are you finding?
Largely very receptive, and I want to compliment Senator Veenstra and Representative Masher for their work on trying to build consensus around as many of these ideas as possible. We've proposed 50 different ways that we could save taxpayer money through reorganization and finding efficiencies and changing the way that we do business. The legislature is required to act on all 50 of those if we want to realize the savings. So I really think we're off to a great start. This is clearly a top priority this legislative session, and I'm very optimistic that we will get a reorganization and efficiency bill signed into law, hopefully very soon.
All right. Governor, this is the first time some of our listeners have been able to speak with you since the condition of the state address. I want to give out our phone number in case they want to join us with a question or comment. If you have a question or some advice for Governor Chuck Culver, give us a call at 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Let me play just a section of your speech that got a little bit of negative response from Republicans. Go ahead.
I'm proud of the fact that we've balanced the budget 3 years in a row without raising taxes on hardworking Iowans.
Afterwards, when I spoke to the Republican House Minority Leader Craig Paulson of Hiawatha, he was a little bit like steam coming out of his ears. He was upset. He felt like that was disingenuous, that that the taxes and fees had gone up in certain cases, whether it was court filing fees, whether there were hunting and fishing licensing fees. He talked about the tobacco tax in your first year of office that was a sort of significant increase on the pack of cigarettes. He said, you know, there have been tax and fee increases over the course of your time as governor, and that that wasn't fair to make that argument during the speech.
Well, I think the point is that there is a difference between a user fee and a across-the-board income tax increase, gas tax increase, for example. And that's the distinction that I'm trying to make, is that I have held the line on new taxes. For example, I have fought now 3 years in a row to resist an increase in the gas tax. I've stated very clearly that, especially during an economic downturn, this is not the time to raise taxes on Iowans. So historically, other governors have taken a different approach. We've had significant increases in the gas tax, corporate income tax, and sales tax under previous Republican governors, and I'm just trying to make the point that I'm going to hold the line on those types of tax increases. But a fee increase some user fee increase, I think is very different, and most voters will agree that there should be a distinction between those two.
Let me ask you about another thing that I think then that they're going to quarrel with you over the course of this session. Your task force on tax credits looked at the whole gamut of them and suggested that 8 need to be eliminated, that they're either underused, mismanaged, just no longer necessary. If that happens, there are going to be people that make the argument that taxes have gone up because a tax credit was repealed. Do you see that as a tax increase?
I don't. These are tax credits that businesses and individuals get from the state. So we're actually giving away over $400 million every year in these tax credits. So it's clearly not a tax increase.
Well, their bill will go up, tax bill, won't it?
Well, it depends on what type of business that they do in the state. These are usually used as incentives to allow us to collect more in terms of revenue to generate more economic development. I think the bottom line on tax credits is we want to make sure that the taxpayers of Iowa are getting their money's worth. We want to make sure that for every dollar we invest in any type of tax credit, that we're seeing a significant return on that investment, and that's what we're after here. We don't want to waste taxpayer money. We don't want to not get a return on that valuable, you know, taxpayer dollar. So it's as much as anything, we're just trying to bring more transparency and accountability to the tax credit process in our state.
Are you worried, Governor? I know in your speech you called for a 2% increase for schools, K-12 schools next year. Schools are obviously excited about that. But are you at all concerned that this is prior to the revenue estimating conference meeting in March, that we would see another downturn? Although schools want the increase, they warn that they don't like mid-year downturns because that's harder for them in the mid-year to cut the budget. Are you worried you're asking for that too soon?
No, in fact, I'm required by law to submit a budget by the end of January. So I'm going to have to ask the legislature very clearly for budget-related expenditures. including funding for the Iowa Power Fund to help us lead the way in terms of renewable energy, funding for veteran services so we can continue to stand up and provide services that our veterans need, funding for early childhood education, health care for kids. So I'm required to lay out those priorities, if you will. Then we have until the end of the session to put together a balanced budget. Those March numbers will clearly help give us all final direction, but I'm required by law to use the December Revenue Estimating Conference numbers. The legislature will use the March numbers, but regardless, we have to reconcile those differences and sign off on a balanced budget at the end of the year.
All right. But you think even if numbers were to go down in March, that you would stand behind that 2% number? Do you think
Well, it's a hypothetical. We don't know, and that's part of the challenge of putting a budget together. But I think that if we've made some really tough choices, including this 10% across the board cut of about $600 million, that should give us the breathing room that we need without having to come back to school districts and do another round of cuts. And that's one reason I cut so much in that across the board cut, is so that we give these entities like school districts a little more certainty in terms of their revenue stream from the state in the future.
All right. You're listening to Governor Chet Culver. We're going to be going to the phones in just a moment. 1-866-780-9100. If you have a question for the governor, 1-866-780-9100. But before we do that, Governor, let me slip in one last question. You're talking about putting together your budget that you need to submit by the end of the month. Will you make a recommendation on the court system? And if so, Supreme Court Justice Marsha Ternus was saying that any further reductions would require more rationing of justice, and really she felt put even possibly public safety in jeopardy. What will you do for the courts?
Well, I think we all learned a lot from the chief judge's address last week, which is exactly why the Constitution requires us to allow her the opportunity to give a condition of the judiciary address. So, I will not recommend any further cuts. I think they've gone as far as they could possibly go, and it's incumbent upon the legislature and our office to work together to give the judiciary the tools that they need, the resources they need to allow for equal and fair access to justice across the state. So I think she made a very compelling argument, and we all need to do as much as we can to support the judicial branch.
All right, let's go to the phones. Judith has been on the line from Ames. Judith, thanks for calling The Exchange.
Yes, Governor Culver, this is Judith Wieg calling. I think you know who I am. I'm the director of the Lyme Disease Association for Iowa. First, we honor you as the greatest governor we've ever had, and we've met with Patty Judge. And I have a question. When the belt tightening stops, will there be funding in the future for nonprofit health groups in any vein? Nonprofit groups are suffering terribly in this recession. Not now, but for the future, is there ever a plan to help nonprofit groups?
Well, Judith, thanks for your call, and thanks for the compliment. And I hope to be able to meet that expectation in the future as the governor in terms of trying to be as effective as any governor that we've had. We are very focused through the Department of Human Services on supporting nonprofits. We were able to backfill some of the 10% across the board cut. I immediately restored, or asked the legislature to immediately restore in a supplemental bill early this session, some of those funding streams that directly help nonprofits. I also have really appreciated the work of the First Lady, Mary Culver. My wife has been a real advocate and champion for women and shelter services, and many of those organizations are nonprofits. So it will be a priority, and we do understand how critical those state resources are to help nonprofits. Finally, I've worked very closely with the former president at the University of Iowa, Sandy Boyd, who has been a real leader when it comes to supporting nonprofits across the state.
All right, let's talk to Karen in. Karen, thanks for calling the Exchange. Karen,
hello?
Can you hear us?
Yes,
go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. I would like to say that on the tax situation where you claim that you haven't raised income taxes, there have been other fees and taxes. But what you don't understand is we make a certain amount of money. And if any kind of a tax is taxed on us, it comes out of our pocket, we end up with the same money. Now, if you were to take all the taxes that you have put in place and you were to transfer them over to income tax, I would still have the same amount of money. And in closing, I would like to say one quick comment. I'm very upset that you did not take it to a vote with this gay marriage. I realize that there are court hearings that are going to transpire and you're waiting on that, but I do believe that you knew in advance back when you claimed you would have put it to a vote that this is how it would work out, and I'm very unhappy with the Democrats and the way they're trying to push the marriage issue on us.
All right, Karen, thanks for your call. Governor, do you think there should be action to let citizens vote on that issue? There is a resolution now that's been proposed in the Senate. Senator Gronstall has said he will not have it come to a vote. But do you think that Iowans should have a chance to vote on that issue?
Well, I do think that Iowans should have an opportunity to have their voice be heard at the legislature. That's why I welcomed those that came last week during the beginning of the session. This is the people's house. People have the right to express their opinion through their elected representatives. And it's important that we urge people to be a part of this process. But it's also important that we respect the fact that we have divergent opinions. And I think we'll just keep moving forward. I think most Iowans are focused on job creation, moving this economy forward, investing in priorities like education and health care. And so I don't believe that it's going to be at the top of the list when people decide how they're going to vote this November.
So even though they're unlikely to have it on the ballot, the way they can be heard is obviously to vote for or against their own legislator or you, in a sense. And you don't think this is going to be the priority when they walk into that voting booth?
I don't. I really believe the Iowans that I talk to are focused on job retention, job creation, doing everything we can to rebuild in eastern Iowa from the floods and disasters of 2008, and that's going to certainly be my priority, is helping us recover both from the economic downturn and the natural disasters of 2008.
You're listening to Iowa Public Radio. You're hearing Governor Chet Culver join us on the Exchange today. If you'd like to join our conversation, we urge you to give us a call at 1-866-780-9100. Again, that number, 1-866-780-9100. Governor, can you talk to me about the early retirement package you've been working on? Also, a four-day work week was one of the proposals. Where are those in the process as you look at the cost savings ideas that the consultant recommended?
Well, we have roughly 2,700 state employees in the executive branch alone that are eligible for retirement, of about 20,000 employees in the executive branch. So that's a significant percentage. The problem for many of them is they don't have health care coverage until they turn 65. So the question is can we come up with an early retirement package for some state employees that allows them to continue to have health care benefits, but with the option of retiring early from state government? That could save us more than $50 million if we encourage a fair number of those eligible to take advantage of this early retirement package. And the in a practical sense, what this means is if a state employee is making $100,000 and they've been with the state for 25 years, for example, we either could leave that position vacant and save $100,000 a year, or hire someone at about half of that cost. So that's why we could realize such savings, and it would cost roughly $10,000 or so to provide health insurance to that individual on an annual basis versus $100,000 in salary.
So that's about what you're looking at. It'd be about $10,000 per individual that takes advantage of the proposal you're putting on the table.
That's about right. And the more people, obviously, that take advantage of this early retirement option, the larger our pool would be in terms of providing that health care coverage. So we believe that we could create essentially a pool of eligible state employees, and that if the pool is bigger, that cost will go down.
And real quickly, before we get to another question from a caller, the four-day work week, is there any state agencies that have suggested they might be amenable to that and raised their hand and said, we'll be the guinea pig?
Well, that's a part of what's going on now is looking agency by agency to see where it makes sense. And obviously it doesn't make sense across the board. But I do think that if you're just talking about saving on utility cost, if going, shutting a complex or buildings down for 3 days instead of two could save significant money over on an annual basis. But I think it's more likely we'll start on kind of a pilot project, that a smaller group of agencies or departments, and move forward and see how it works. Utah has gone to a four-day work week. Overall, the results have been a net positive in terms of cost savings and satisfaction with the services that are continuing to be delivered.
Just a few seconds left, Governor, but Marcy from Keokuk wonders if there's been a decision about whether to close the Mental Health Institute in Mount Pleasant, which was the institute the Department of Human Services recommended if one needed to be closed. Do you support that?
I think any time that we can find efficiencies, that's a step in the right direction, but we need input. That's what this legislative process is all about. We have four mental health institutions across the state, and which one of those four is ultimately closed is unclear. That ultimately might be closed is unclear at this time. So I do urge citizens to weigh in on this. But the fact is, we do have capacity in a number of our mental health institutions, and we could realize significant savings by combining some of those services.
Governor, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you've been listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio.